You can listen to Rootstock Radio on the go, wherever you get your podcasts. And find us online at rootstockradio.com. Rootstock Radio is brought to you by Organic Valley.
90.1 FM. Listen to Rootstock Radio every Monday at 5:30 on WEFT Community Radio. Coming up next is In the Know, a WEF-produced public affairs show that highlights locally available resources. Hang in there for some Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater at 7 p.m., Monday night R&R at 8 o'clock, and then we have live local music on WEFT Sessions at 10 o'clock and recorded local music on Champaign Local 901 at 11.
WEFT is supported in part by Kevin Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including State of Illinois employee insurance, is accepted, and there is also a self-pay sliding scale. Kevin Elliott or his staff can be reached at 398-9066 or ELLIOTTCounselingGroup.com.
Good evening, CU community. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1. Welcome to In the Know, a public affairs show where social issues, trending topics, relevant research, and important perspectives are discussed so you, the listener, can be in the know. The opinions expressed on the show are those of the host and the guests and not of WEFT. We're streaming live on my personal Facebook page, hopefully if we can get it to work. Listeners are also welcome to submit comments and questions on my Facebook page or via Twitter at Neater79. Tonight we're going to be talking about the topic of transgender. I think there's a lot of misconceptions around this topic. People aren't completely educated as to what it means. So we are going to unpack this topic and help educate the listener so you guys are in the know. I have four guests on my show tonight. We're going to have them introduce themselves. We're going to start over here with Aiden.
Hello, my name is Aiden. And I work at Target. I work as a Starbucks employee and at the Target in Champaign, and I also work in the back room.
My name is Hayden Lee. I'm 23 years old, and I'm a local from the area. I work in retail, and I've been involved in our local queer community since about the time I was 16.
I'm Cameron Hurley. I also work at Starbucks. I go by he, him pronouns, and I'm also a queer activist in the local community.
So you three are individuals from the local area who have had your own stories with transitioning. And so I think a lot of people are not 100% sure exactly what it means to be transgender. So we kind of wanted to have a holistic, comprehensive way of approaching this. On our phone line, we also have somebody who's going to speak more from like the legislative point of view. So are you there, Mike?
Yes, I am.
Okay, if you want to tell us a little bit about the work that you do.
Sure. My name is Mike Ziri. I'm the Director of Public Policy at Equality Illinois. And Equality Illinois is the state civil rights organization for LGBTQ folks in the state. And what I do at the organization is, as policy director, I do a mixture of lobbying, policy developing, and political work. I help build and help set our policy agenda. So a lot of the things we do in Springfield on the legislative side, and we had a very, very, I'd say, successful year with enhancing our civil rights laws here in the state, which I could talk about later on. Okay. So I do some of the lobbying in Springfield and some policy building and a lot of civic engagement and community outreach across the state. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things I want to, just open this up with is what does it mean to be transgender? I think a lot of the media kind of creates these misconceptions that it's cross-dressing or something like that. This is an actual lifestyle change. It's being who you recognize yourself to be is what you personally see as your identity. So it's not just, oh, today I just want to be a girl or today I want to be a boy. So when you define transgender to other people who ask this question, how do you explain it?
All right, I'm going to start. I guess for me, it was more of a recognition from when I was really young. There was something definitely different about me. I won't say that I was born in the wrong body because I wasn't. I was born in the right body, and I was meant to make this transition. And I feel like that's a huge misconception in the transgender community. Some people feel that way and some people don't. I definitely don't. I definitely feel like I was meant to do this. But transgender, I guess, to me is just another aspect of who I am, kind of like my eye color. It's just an aspect of who I am. It's who I've always been.
When I'm asked what being transgender is like, it's kind of really complicated because being transgender is generally conceived as somebody who is born assigned male or female and then transitioned to the opposite sex. But that's not all that being transgender is. It encompasses a lot more than that. It encompasses being non-binary. It encompasses being intersex. It encompasses so much more than that. And I think it's really important that people understand that being trans doesn't mean that you have to fit this certain mold, because there's more than one right way to be trans.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For me, I think being transgender is a lot like how Cameron explained, where I feel like as much as I feel wrong in the mindset that I have, the body is changeable. You can change it. You can mold it and make it your own and make it your home. And I feel like the person that you are born is who you're supposed to be. You just have to find a home within your mind and your body and align the two to make you feel right, to make you feel the way that you believe yourself to be.
Okay. Great way. And, you know, it's interesting to hear from person to person. It even is defined a little bit differently, which I think that's kind of what we want to promote, is that this isn't something that has to be a rigid definition. It doesn't have to be something that conforms to what society expects or wants. This is something that is just based on who you are, kind of like what Cameron was saying. You know, we all determine, you know, we can't determine our height. We can't determine things like that. But what we can determine, why are we not allowed to make that determination for ourselves? So I think that's, you know, kind of what people are expecting you to go along with, whatever the media says transitioning looks like. So there's a lot of terminology. I want to start with that a little bit too, because I think that's important. Terminology is important. So when you talk about gender binary, how do you define that?
The gender binary is not real. That's not a thing. That's a social construct, and that's not something that really goes over well in the majority of the trans community, because mm-hmm. gender is extremely fluid. It has a never-ending spectrum that you can't possibly follow in any kind of sensical pattern.
Because this definition, and I'm going to read what I found online, because I think it's important to know that if somebody were to Google, this is what they're finding.
Absolutely, yeah.
So gender binary is the idea that sex and gender are two distinct, opposite, and disconnected categories, male and female. It also has gender expression, which refers to the ways in which people externally communicate their gender identity to others through behavior, clothing, haircut, voice, and emphasizing, de-emphasizing, or changing their body's characteristics. Gender expression is not an indicator of sexual orientation. So how do you feel about that definition?
Gender expression, that definition is pretty correct, but I'm still not a fan of the gender binary. I think it's ignorant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think expression should also be the what you identified as expression should be the, you know, the
all-encompassing
definition of it. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So the two should not be separated.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it talks about gender nonconforming, which is a person who doesn't adhere to societal pressures to conform to gender norms and roles. So that sounds like that may be a better definition of what this looks like. I think we kind of find that the more we know, the more we realize a lot of these hard and fast definitions probably aren't going to apply for very long. You're going to see people, you know, reinventing this, which is how it should be. I mean, if we always stick to the way that we've always done things, you know, even when you look at race and how you weren't allowed to marry, you know, biracial relationships weren't allowed. I think we see that we're starting to go in that direction as well, where you need to have broader definitions rather than narrow definitions.
Yeah.
There's also intersex. I actually had a friend ask me, what does this mean? I saw this in an article. I'm confused. It says a general term used for a variety of conditions in which a person is born with a reproductive or sexual anatomy that doesn't seem to fit the typical definitions of female or male. So what do you think about that definition?
I mean, I think that's pretty accurate. Even having both or an unrecognizable.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate for the definition, I would say, of intersex.
Okay. So this is one that comes up quite a bit. The difference between transsexual and transgender.
Okay, first of all, transsexual is extremely transphobic, and it is toxic, and it's just problematic, and it's not okay to say at all. Do not ever go up to a trans person and describe them as being transsexual, because it's not the same thing. It's old terminology that was used often derogatorily, and it's just not acceptable to use anymore. It's like...
Unless somebody's using it for themselves.
Which is rare, but I can accept that, yeah. It's always good to ask somebody how they want to be referred to and what their identity is.
Okay. And then, obviously, transphobia. I think this is something where, again, people use it conveniently or in denial of it existing. So when you define transphobia, how do you define it?
I would define phobia as obviously a fear. But I would say that transphobia is specifically the fear of not understanding, not really knowing enough and having the knowledge to interact with a trans person in a way that makes this space with the trans person and the other person comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's the fear or lack of knowledge, essentially.
Okay.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I would agree.
Okay. Yeah, so again, you know, I think definitions, like you were saying, are important, especially when you are wanting to respect somebody's identity, the process that they're going at, the chapter that they are at in their life. And so it's important to be able to have these definitions. I also have my daughter in the studio, and we've had these discussions for a long time about what this means. You know, one of her, and this isn't quite the same, but one of her... first exposures that she remembers is having a drag queen for a hairstylist. And mm-hmm. So it was, what does this mean? We went to a drag show. What does that mean? You know, she saw performers, and it was being able to differentiate, you know, who is dressed in drag and being more of a situational temporary thing and who this is an actual lifestyle change for. And so, you know, I think that's where we also have, you know, awareness and prevention and, you know, dispelling stigma when we're educating our children on what this means, so that when they have, you know, classmates who are even questioning, that they have somebody who can be an advocate for them and a supporter and be a safe space, because I think we see that's rare. Unfortunately, we're seeing that all the way down the hill from our government right now, where there are not safe spaces that are being created by those we have entrusted to make our society safe for us. And it should be safe for everyone, not just those who are considered to be in the majority. But again, that's, you know, hopefully what we can do here with, you know, this type of discussion. I did also want to talk about, you know, people, I won't just point out religious people, but sorry, who this is their question. How does this happen? You know, we are born, you know, with our gender. It's assigned to us by our chromosomes, and that's what we're supposed to be. So when people say, ask you, or has anybody ever asked you, why are you the way you are? How do you respond to that? Because there's all sorts of theories out there.
All right, I'm going to take the first one on this one.
Okay.
So I have had direct family ask me this. And what I always tell them is my brain and my body are disconnected in some sort, but they're also very connected in other ways too. My chromosomes may say one thing, but my body is definitely telling me a different thing. And I think everybody should listen to their body no matter what you're speaking about. And if your body is telling you one thing and it's telling you, like, this is not right, this is mm-hmm. not okay, like, you should listen to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to be led in a certain way to make decisions that are best for you.
Mm-hmm.
So not only that, but I don't know. I don't know how else to explain it.
I had something to say.
Okay.
In regards to the whole chromosome thing, determining your gender, that's kind of just inaccurate because I actually have a transgender friend who is a biology major, and he's explained to me the overbearing amount of chromosome patterns that you can have that can either make you male, female, or neither biologically, and none of them are specific to just the usual, you know, two sets that you're allowed to have, and that's all you can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that simple. And anyone claiming that it is clearly doesn't have the education that they're trying to back up.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that mine was definitely more of a psychological development. I understood myself psychologically and understood myself better at ages where really young kids are really not supposed to, or they're sheltered from themselves in a lot of ways.
Supposed to be quite aware.
Yeah. And I had an understanding that ultimately as a young female growing up, that I was not like other females. Psychologically, I didn't look at myself and my body. I didn't have that awareness that I couldn't play with the boys, that I fit in more with the boys, and I just didn't see it until it was pointed out that I needed to you know, conform to female necessities, like wearing you know, a bra and mm-hmm. doing things that were necessities as I grew older and developed. And I started realizing that the physical and psychological developments were very different.
And I think that this was several years ago, but I read an article about a family that was living, I think it was in Ontario, and the parents had made the conscious choice not to tell their children what their gender was. They wanted to raise them completely gender free. You've seen it even in the media, like Angelina Jolie, she has a child who is kind of on that brink of just determining mm-hmm. how this is going to look for him or her, however she refers to herself in the future. And I know that it can be scary as a parent when you have somebody who's doing this. I have a friend who his daughter was transitioning and kind of told him, I want to be referred to as him. Mm-hmm. And when we had discussions, at first I think he thought this is just a phase or maybe they're confused. I tried to, you know, with a little bit of comfort, you know, try to say, it's okay, you'll get through this. But just really be supportive and listen. Those are the two things you have to do first, is no matter what somebody's going through, and this includes, you know, when I'm talking about mental health, the first thing you need to do is be supportive and listen, because there's no way you could possibly respond with any type of genuine support if you haven't listened to what's going on first and help, you know, help them even feel like there's a safe space where they can talk about it in the first place. So I think, you know, being able to say, you know, like you were saying, I have my own definition, or these are terms that I think we need to completely kick out. I think that's okay to say that, even within your own community, that I don't subscribe to necessarily this hard and fast definition. This is how I want to be able to define this for myself. And I think that also helps to foster a space for future individuals to know, okay, well, this person has come out and said, I don't have to even necessarily conform to what the LGBTQ community has said. I'm going to kind of do this my own way. And I think that's how you help everybody to have a safer space to define this how they want to. You know, there are medical theories, you know, there's all sorts of wonderful stuff on the internet that you can find that's completely, it perpetuates something that's probably not good at all.
Not helpful.
Yeah. So it says chromosomes always define sex and gender. And this says, unless you have a complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, CIS, or 5-alpha, I won't even go into that terminology, blah, 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 blah. It basically says that's not really possible.
Yeah.
It says, a woman with XY chromosomes developed as a normal woman, underwent spontaneous puberty, reached, menstruated regularly, experienced 2 unassisted pregnancies, and gave birth to a daughter who was completely androgynous. So, again, you know, if we're trying to stick to the hard and fast rules of science, I think we're going to find, like you were saying with your friend who's a bio major, we're going to probably find out more that that's not exactly how everything exists. I'm not a bio major, so I can't speak to any of that. But I do think we at least need to be open to, you know, if we're going to rely on the medical field and research, then we should really be open to everything that it offers in its discovery.
I would also just like to point out that while chromosomes can determine your physical sex, it has nothing to do with gender, because sex does not have to do with the parts that you have. Just like, gender doesn't have to do with the parts that you have. Like, you can be male and have a vagina, and you can have gay sex and have, be trans as a male with a vagina, and then be with a man that's cis and has a penis. Like, that has nothing to do with your gender. Genitalia is genitalia, and that's all it really is.
It's a physical representation of something that's scientific, and that's about it.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with anything else. Yeah.
And then the next kind of goes along with that. It says there's no evidence that you can have a female brain and a male body or vice versa. But there's a lot of research now that is coming out to dispel that. It says there's a very strong evidence of the biological origins of transgender identities. This is from the European Journal of Physiology from 2013. Gender-dependent differentiation of the brain has been detected at every level of organization. And that's from Neuroscience in the 21st Century, also 2013. So there's a lot of research again out there that's saying what we may have thought was always true actually may not be as true as we thought. And yeah. I think the more now that we've had a community where we can start having these conversations, there's been research efforts that have been applied to understanding this more, just as you would with anything biological or even psychological, it's worth it to understand. So then we can now hopefully use this to push through legislation, because now we're saying, this is not a novel idea. This is not somebody's, you know, weekend idea. This is actually how we exist as humans. I think we've heard this even just about the LGBT community in general. You hear this theory that, well, you can pray away the gay, or you can have counseling and fix this in your head so you're not transgender anymore. Yeah. But we know that's not true. So when people say this is just a psychological problem, how do you respond to that?
Well, I can definitely say that I've tried to pray away the gay and the trans, and it definitely did not work. And that's just my personal experience. Some people didn't even go there. But I went through several different awful, tumultuous sessions, we'll just put it that way, of things like that. And it doesn't work. It only puts you in a position where you hate yourself more. Mm-hmm. So it creates a lot of self-hate, and it sets you back a lot further than you ever thought you'd be. So I didn't start my transition until I was into my 20s because of that, because I was still trying to fight that religious stigma and that, you know, hold back of praying mm-hmm. away the gay mm-hmm. or whatever. But
I would say that my experience with religion and being transgender is very much the same. I had a lot of people who believed ultimately that they could change me by counseling me better. I had many different experiences with priests and pastors and of different religions even. I tried to find a home in a church where I felt comfortable and accepted, and that they didn't try to change me or force me to be anything but me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really feel that if you are truly a part of that religion that you would want to make somebody so unhappy and force them to be miserable and depressed and feel worthless. I feel like the true idea of religion is to believe in better, to believe that everyone can be better.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the idea that you can pray away gay and trans and just the LGBTQ idea of being different from everyone else is just impossible and impractical and is illogical to apply. It's hurtful and harmful and shouldn't be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually commented on a friend's Facebook page. They had posted an article that basically said that, you know, somebody had come out to their family, and this was somebody who had grown up on, you know, Focus on the Family and other religious ideologies. And I said, you know, I was raised in the Christian church. My faith is every bit a part of my life every day, but it's also the reason why I do things like I'm doing now, like this show, because nowhere have I ever felt I had instruction that said you need to basically cast out the sodomites. And so for me, being a social worker has always been about helping and helping people be open-minded. It's unfortunate that people use religion as a weapon or to qualify how, if they're a decent person, because that's really what it comes down to, is if you're qualifying who you're going to be a decent person to. But I think it's just lack of exposure too, because you put up a religious wall sometimes that keeps you from reaching out and having a relationship with people who have any type of difference from you. And so it's just much easier to say, well, I'm pretty sure I know what they're about, and I don't really agree with it because my religion says that, you know, I don't agree with it. But, you know, like you were saying, if at any time your beliefs are causing you to hurt somebody else, you need to reevaluate them, because they probably aren't. You aren't following the way you're supposed to be following. One of the definitions that, again, came up in Google was gender dysphoria. So how would you define gender dysphoria?
Gender dysphoria to me, it varies a lot. I can remember experiencing gender dysphoria at the earliest age, probably being around 8. And the easiest summary I have is looking in the mirror, and you can see your outer shell, what you look like on the outside to everybody else. And just beneath the surface, there's somebody that you recognize that's trying to break through. And it's painful to see that that person can't get out. You know that person is who you're supposed to be, and you're the only person that can see them. It's kind of like they're like a ghost that no one else realizes is there. And it's just, it's painful for you. And transitioning is definitely one of the best things I've ever done with getting my dysphoria figured out. I cannot put into words what it feels like to wake up in the morning, and when I walk past the mirror, I stop and I look again, and I just feel this overwhelming sense of pride and joy and success, because I finally see that person that I've been trying to let out for so long. They're finally here, and everyone else can see them, and it's not just me struggling to accept that they're not meant to be there, because they're here and they're not going anywhere ever again, and it's just extremely freeing.
We need an applause button for the radio show.
I'm over here like, hell yeah.
I do want to add something though about gender dysphoria. It doesn't apply to every trans person, and if you feel like you identify as a trans person but you don't personally have an issue with dysphoria, that's okay. That does not invalidate you whatsoever, because everybody's transition is different. Everybody's level of dysphoria is different, or lack thereof. And I just want everyone out there to know that if you don't experience that, it's not a problem. Like, you're still good. You're you. Be great.
Yeah, I think everything you said was said really well. I mean, that is a great way of saying, like you said before earlier, do it your way. I mean, this is you doing you your way. I looked up a lot of different things that Laverne Cox has said in social media, and I think that, like you said, you know, some of the things she says is how freeing it really is. When you finally are who you are, there's nothing more freeing than that. But I think the issue is, you know, we can stand strong as individuals, but we need to get society at the same place to support that freedom. So, you know, it's hard to be able to explain to people, you know, that there's any type of confusion, or that confusion can happen, you know, like you said, as young as 8 years old. I mean, I think we think that children don't understand, but they understand a lot more than as my daughter shakes her head, yes, because you don't understand me half the time, Mom.
I think it's also because we don't give children the benefit of the doubt that they have the capacity to understand more, to teach them more. We shelter them and we shade them from harm and what we think is harm. Sometimes what we think is harm is actually what they will be exposed to, regardless of in school or on a bus or in public. And if they unknowingly run into these things and they don't have the knowledge to back it up,
they're not prepared for it. Yeah,
they aren't prepared. They will create a phobia of their own. That could be transphobia. It could be that they don't know how to deal with this. So then, you know, they avoid friends or making friends. And as this is a growing concern, like more people are more accepting and more out there and available to talk to about this, they themselves might question and then feel afraid to ask because they don't have that information and we don't give them the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that, you know, like you were saying, Aiden, is that I think when you discount how smart your children are and how much they can comprehend and process, I think, like you were saying, people feel like, well, we're giving them more than they can handle, and then all of a sudden we're going to create this emotional turmoil. I think the emotional turmoil happens when you don't explain it, because they are going to be exposed to different things regardless. The emotional turmoil happens when they don't understand and you haven't given them the tools. And now all of a sudden they're not sure if they should be afraid or if they should, you know, interact with somebody. It's not as if you're asking them to go out and, you know, have a sign and picket or anything like that. You're just asking them to be a human on the very basic levels of being human.
And understanding. Which is,
yeah. You know, I had a mom who was, her son was friends with my daughter for a long time. She sent me an email one time and she said, I don't feel like my child's empathetic. This scares me. You know, I want my child to be empathetic. How do you do that? And it's, well, you have to expose him to things. You have to show him different sides of life so he understands what's out there. And that, I think the other thing is, not only do you do that, but you have to give them that empowerment to make them feel like they can make a difference. My daughter is part of the Gay Straight Alliance at her school. I was excited, you know, once Unit 4 started to have Gay Straight Alliances at their schools, because I felt that was incredibly important.
Absolutely.
But, you know, she chose to do it because we've always, you know, had friends of every walk of life. And so do you want to tell them a little bit about what you do at the GSA meetings?
Yeah, so I haven't gone there too much before, but we basically talk about what we are and how we feel. And I remember the one time that we went there for the Pride Parade, we were making posters and signs. And there were all of them for all of the genders and every way you feel. And I remember I was working on one, and there was a bunch of people there. There were people that were gay, there were people that were straight and trans. Two of my best friends, their friends are transgender, and they're
transitioning.
That's okay.
To female to male. And when I saw that, I was happy that I could see people that were transitioning and they felt welcome, because my friend told me that they had this little group of friends that were all either gay, straight, trans, anything like that, and one of their friends was straight. And I felt that it was really nice that they all had friends to comfort them when they were transitioning, and so then they didn't feel alone and that no one understood them. And it really was warming that people are there for each other when whatever they're going through, and I was really happy when I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, my friend helps me if I need trouble for what I am, because I'm bi. And so it's just really nice when you can see that and you have people that are there for you. So then you know you don't have to be afraid. You can go out and talk to people because you have people you can trust.
Mm-hmm.
When you can form a bond, a friendship, and trust, that you don't have to feel scared and alone and misunderstood, and it helps you to be stronger
mm-hmm.
in more ways, so you're not as isolated from people, which is what happens when people don't feel they can go out. They start to isolate themselves and they can't get around. It leads to like depression, or, well, that's what it leads to, and that can lead to more things,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't get better from that. So to have people there for you is a really,
really, is really important
thing. Yeah, and to have teachers and even schools that allow that is really, really good for people, and is helping in every way.
Mm-hmm. Well, the unfortunate part is we can have things on, you know, a smaller level. But I brought in an article from our wonderful government. It says, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has reversed an Obama-era policy explicitly defining transgender workers as protected under employment discrimination laws. The Wednesday policy reversal of what qualifies as employment discrimination under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act comes down to an ideological disagreement over whether sex is decided by a person's birth certificate or whether sexual discrimination includes broader gender identity. Former Attorney General Eric Holder in 2014 interpreted sex discrimination to apply to discrimination based on gender identity, while Jeff Sessions interprets that it only applies to discrimination between men and women. So I want to bring Mike in the conversation. We didn't forget about you, Mike. But how do you see this working? Because I know a lot of the work that you're doing is trying to, you know, combat some of these policy changes that, you know, were once in effect and now we're seeing, you know, the slide downhill to, you know, discrimination.
No, absolutely. And Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, has been pretty active in the last week going after and attacking the rights of LGBTQ folks, particularly, like you said, transgender workers. And also the rights of women when it comes to birth control and contraception as well. Jeff Sessions is wrong. And while he may have changed the Department of Justice memo on the issue, there's actually several different federal court cases working through the federal courts right now about this very topic. That could very well get to the U.S. Supreme Court. And there was a case actually here in Illinois, in the Seventh Circuit, which is Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, that went to this issue, and the Seventh Circuit said, discrimination against gender identity is discrimination on the basis of sex under the Civil Rights Act. So that's the important legal principle that really goes above and beyond anything the Justice Department says. But I also want to point out it's important to note that Illinois does have legal protections on the books, including non-discrimination protections that are inclusive of gender identity. And we've had those since 2005. So while we see the rest of the country at the federal level going backwards on these protections and these legal rights, Illinois is actually moving in their direction. And we earlier mentioned conversion therapy, or Pray the Gay Away. And I'm really happy to say that 2 years ago, working with the legislature, we were able to ban most types of conversion therapy here in Illinois. And we couldn't have done that without individuals like those who are on this program right now sharing their stories, particularly with lawmakers. It really, really moved legislators to hear those personal stories. And we heard it again this year with some other pieces of legislation. So that's just so incredibly important. And it's so important for those of us who lobby on behalf of the LGBTQ community, it's important for policymakers that we listen to those who are affected by these policy changes, whether they're policy changes at the federal level or policy proposals down in Springfield.
Mm-hmm. So a town hall that our representative Carol Ammons recently held to talk about the LGBT community as far as legislative changes, there were a couple pieces that were discussed. So there was the isolation of transgender youth, which is House Bill 664. Can you talk a little bit more about that one?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, it's a really good tie-in to the discussion you had earlier about chromosomes. So House Bill 664 is one of the what we call in the language of lobbying a bad bill, in that it's a bill introduced by a state representative out of the Palatine area. And what the bill would do is it would essentially force transgender students and gender nonconforming students to either use restrooms in school facilities that are not congruent to their gender identity. And it does that by creating this term of biological sex and also basing sex on chromosomes. And the transgender or gender nonconforming students then would have to petition the school board, in effect, and say, they request a reasonable accommodation, which can include like a faculty bathroom or a faculty locker room or anything like that. The bill has been introduced 2 years in a row now, and very happy to say that both years, thanks to the advocacy of organizations like Equality Illinois, like the ACLU, but I would say more importantly, the advocacy of citizens talking to their legislators, whether it be Representative Ammons or any legislator, and sharing your stories of why this bill is hurtful and harmful, and then also sharing what the medical community thinks of it, because the mental health and medical community really opposes HB 664 because of the terrible effects it would have on students. That bill has not moved anywhere in the legislative process in Illinois for 2 years. At the same time, we see other legislation just like it passing in other states, whether that be Mississippi or South Dakota or North Carolina. So we're very happy to see that because of the advocacy of the many members of the LGBTQ community who've raised their voice and contacted their policymaker about that bad bill.
Mm-hmm. There was another House bill, if you can discuss it, HB 1785. And I think this is another one of those areas where people don't recognize when you're talking about, equal rights and people having equal access to, different services. It talks about, being able to change records to match who you are now. And so I think we all take it for granted that we can just go get our driver's license or, do whatever we need to do at the county clerk's office. But there are some issues that can come up for those who are in the transgender population. So can you talk a little bit about that bill?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's a really great bill. It's one of those pieces of legislation that I think helps keep Illinois moving forward. So what it does is it very simply says that no longer under state law would a transgender or intersex person have to undergo a surgical procedure in order to be able to correct the gender marker on your birth certificate. Before this law, which takes effect January 1 of 2018, and the governor just signed it last in August, before this law, state law said that a transgender person or anyone who wants to correct the gender marker on their birth certificate would have to undergo a surgical procedure. That has been the law since the 50s. We were the first state to allow someone to correct the gender marker on their birth certificate, but our laws did not keep pace with modern standards of care. And so working with groups like the ACLU and the AIDS Foundation and really an amazing group of advocates who shared their stories in committee hearings, in personal meetings with legislators. The bill was passed this year through both chambers. The governor signed it. So it no longer relies on the need for surgery as the defining factor to correct the gender marker, which puts us, there are 15 other states, 14 other states that do it, that we're following the lead on. And it's important because, like you said, when we would talk to legislators about this, they would say, what's the big deal? What do you really need your birth certificate for?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an opportunity to educate those legislators of how important having these accurate identity documents is, and the risk of discrimination, of harassment, of bullying because someone may not have documents that reflect who they are, or they may have documents that, your driver's license you could correct without a surgical procedure, but not your birth certificate. So you have, inconsistent documents there,
mm-hmm.
Which really present challenges just for daily life. So we were very happy to do that, and that was one of those bills I mentioned earlier, the power of stories. We had some Republican legislators vote for that bill, the birth certificate modernization bill, and after the fact, we were told we did this because we met with a transgender constituent, and we understood what this meant.
Awesome.
And that's the power there of sharing that story if someone's comfortable and in a position where they can do so,
mm-hmm.
Because it really opened the eyes of the legislator who didn't understand the issue before. So I think there's great power there.
Yeah, definitely. you know, and kind of along the lines of what you were saying with bullying, there was another, a Senate Bill 1761, the In Panic Defenses Bill, where it said, you know, it says it prohibits the use of the LGBTQ panic defense in murder cases. So I think, you know, we're seeing beyond, you know, how this can set a bad precedent if you're allowing somebody to have that defense. That if you want to elaborate just a little bit on that bill.
Sure. So the panic defenses, they're used rarely, but when they are used, they're very, very shocking. But they rely on this defense tactic where a defendant in a criminal case, in these cases, murder cases, will attempt to argue that they were provoked by the sudden knowledge of someone's sexual orientation or gender identity. And usually in some of these cases involves someone hitting on someone else or a sexual encounter. And it's blaming the victim. And it's saying that there is something disordered or troubling about LGBTQ people that justifies what I did. And that's not the case. And we know that's not true, and it's horrific. And we, working with some of our allies, said, no, we want to put a period on this and to make this so you can't argue this. You can't get a lesser charge by saying you were provoked by because someone was LGBTQ. And from our understanding, we believe it's the first pro-LGBTQ bill in the country to pass both chambers of a state legislature with unanimous support. So we're very excited by that. We're the second state in the country to do this. And I think it really goes to the whole point of the violence that permeates the lives of LGBTQ people, especially transgender individuals, the discrimination and harassment. And if this is one way we can lessen that and not have the victim attacked again after the violence, then it's something we should do. And I'm really happy to see that legislators made that move.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking about, like you said, you know, constituents are sharing their stories, or we have allies who are, you know, coming out in support. So one of the things to bring to all four guests is, you know, people want to get involved. I think there are some people who want to support, but because they may have not previously had any exposure, or they just don't even know how to get started with it. I know one of the things we talked about was terminologies. Sometimes that's a place to start, with not using certain terms that are especially derogatory. But, you know, even educating yourselves on what the proper terms are. So how else do you see, you know, if you could give advice to people who want to get involved or be allies, where can they start?
I would say
sure.
that...
Oh,
sorry. You can go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no, you go ahead. I didn't know who that question was directed to.
I would say that the best form for somebody who wants to get involved and has no idea where to start is to find a local community. Like LGBT Center. Like we have the Up Center here, nonprofit organization, but they specifically work with the LGBTQ and also parents and kids and teens. And there's lots of different ways to support not only your own knowledge, but other people. You can find other people in the same position as you, where you can seek comfort and also advice from others. The people who are looking for advice on understanding more about a specific situation, they can find information and maybe get in contact with somebody who is, you know, maybe a trans person and they want to know more about how that works. There's always somebody more open out there and willing to be open and honest and have that discussion with somebody. For example, I personally don't feel attached to certain kinds of terms, but in others I do. And so maybe if there's somebody that's sensitive on some levels, they can point you in the right direction to who to talk to. So there's always, it's always just that first step in finding the exact person or place to start. And a lot of good places is just finding an LGBTQ community center or a place in their town where, like, the Gay Straight Alliance, you know, maybe in a school or something like that.
Okay. Cameron, you.
Well, I would also say, so social media is huge right now. So outside of your local community, if you don't have a, you know, a local LGBT center or something like that, if you live in a smaller community, I would say that starting on social media, educating yourself, Google is great. As long as you're seeking the right, you know, sources, and having those people who can be your allies on that is incredible. But fighting that battle on social media is huge. Mm-hmm. Even outside of our local communities, having that social media presence, I think is just as important as having a physical presence, because not everybody can leave their house. Not everybody has the ability to go out and march in a rally or, you know, show up for people. But you can show up in other ways. So I think having that social media presence is just as large.
Yeah, that's a good point.
One of the biggest things that I notice with people wanting to be an activist or an ally or whatever your terminology is that you need to be consistent, for one thing, and you need to do a lot of the legwork yourself. This is true for a lot of marginalized groups of people. I have found it far too often that people expect me to go out of my way on a daily basis, multiple times a day, upon the drop of a hat, to explain what being trans is and to give them definitions and to basically write them an essay. And they want me to carry that emotional burden, and it gets tiring. You can do a lot of this research yourself, and you can do fact checks based on what you found. Like, you can bounce things off of me, but don't expect me or other trans folks or other marginalized people to carry that burden for you. You are capable of doing a lot of this work yourself. It's the fact that you feel entitled to it being handed to you. And that's something that you need to work on if you want to actually be involved and be a good person and be a friend to other people.
No, I mean, that's a good point. Again, especially because, you know, we've talked about how it's individualized. So you can't possibly ask one person to speak for an entire population. So educating yourself on the basics, you know, terminology is great. But I think once you find the facts, you need to learn the flow of how to apply them. Because like you said, it's not always going to apply to this person as it does to this person. So that, I think, is part of the education, is figuring out how do you, you know, apply that, which again starts with listening. But I do think it's also coming out in, you know, supporting if you can at events, so you can, you know, see exactly, you know, meet people, talk to, you know, hear more stories. Because I think that's where a lot of the education stops. You only Google and you only leave yourself to that, but you don't see actually how what's on paper actually applies in real life. That, I think, can be the shocking thing for some people, is they have educated themselves all they think and they understand terminology, but then when it actually comes to seeing it in real life, that's when the questions come up. And I think that's when the questions should come up, yeah, because now you see how it's playing out in real life. And I think that's your opportunity to be able to engage with other people and, you know, have a better conversation. You know, we saw with Caitlyn Jenner, when that transition happened, and there were a lot of people who felt like, well, this is media and this is just a big storm and this isn't really what, you know, transgender looks like. And this person is afforded a lot more support because they were, you know, a celebrity at some point. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not everybody gets a ticker tape parade when they transition, unlike Caitlyn. But, you know, when you're, for me as a parent, when, you know, you're thinking of your own experience when you're with your parents and what you wish they would have known, what tips do you give for parents who may have children who are even questioning, so that, like you said, we're not shutting a door, putting the transition or the change or coming out years down the road when it really should have happened now?
Just recently, I helped a mother come to understanding and terms with their child being trans and transitioning female to male. And the mom was really just asking mostly, you know, like, how can I support, you know, I am supportive, but what more can I be doing? Where can I go? What are resources? And
I mean, that's incredible to begin with.
Yeah, well, and the mother
be asking those questions.
And the mother was very supportive overall, just because that's how she felt was the best way to go about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know a whole lot about, like, the personal aspects of before I met them, but right. Ultimately, just coming from a friend of mine, she didn't know me at all, and the friend had asked for her, you know, hey, can you meet and talk to her and, you know, her child and see what you can provide them. And ultimately, what came of it was that they got to meet a trans person in real life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, see the results of how hormones has worked for me, because I've been on hormones 4.5 years. So the results were very clear and obvious, and that I was a happy and healthy person. Mm-hmm. And seeing me as a full-bodied person also made the mother realize that, like,
it's more real.
It's more real. Mm-hmm. It's more realistic. It's accomplishable. It's not scary. It's not threatening. It doesn't harm anything. And it also just confirms, like, this is how my child can be. So, you know, like, what can I do? And
right.
We talked about resources and places to go. And, you know, they went to Howard Brown in Chicago.
Which is incredible.
It's an incredible place, and I recommend it. And within, like, a month or two, I believe, the child received hormones and is, you know,
transitioning.
Doing great.
Yeah.
My biggest point of advice for parents out there that either currently have children who are questioning or who may have children that are questioning is to not overthink it so much. Let your kid decide who they are. Your job as a parent is to take care of them and to love them, and that's really what they need from you if they're questioning. They need you to be unconditionally supportive and for you to show them that no matter what, you're there for them, you love them. One of the biggest things that was most important for me was recently my dad told me he was sorry for how things went down when I first came out, and he looked at me and he said, no matter what, you're always going to be my kid and I'll love you and I'll fight for you. And it was the first time that he looked at me and said he was proud to call me his daughter.
Oh, wow. Affirmation. Affirmation. That's amazing.
Validating your kid is extremely important. Don't let them go a single day thinking that you don't appreciate them or that you don't believe in them or that you don't see them for who they see themselves to be, because you're their number one support system. Like, they need you.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, so key, affirmation. And I think that's what we all want. We want validation, especially from those who are supposed to be there for us unconditionally. So, well, thank you guys for being on the show. I think this was a great first conversation. We will definitely be having many more conversations about this, because I think there's a lot more to discuss.
Absolutely.
But thank you guys for being on the show. Thank you, Mike, for calling in and being a part of the discussion. So if you want to tune in next week, we're going to be on at the same time, 6 to 7. I'll also archive this show on my personal Facebook page, Sherry Williamson. You can also find it on Tumblr at InTheKnow217. You can also listen in live as well as find our archived sessions on radiofreeamerica.com. Again, thank you everybody for tuning in. I'll also provide information for Equality Illinois if you want to check that out and find out other ways to support this great cause. So thank you guys for again being on the show.
Thank you.
Bye. See you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
WEFT is sponsored by Unity Church and Spiritual Center. Unity honors the universal truths in all religion and respects each individual's right to choose a spiritual path. In addition to the Sunday 11 a.m. worship service, Unity also offers weekly meditation and Reiki, a Course in Miracles study group, a spiritual circle group, Al-Anon, and AA meetings. The complete schedule can be viewed at cunity.org and is located at 1206 East Main in Urbana.
Young blood.